Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody? Anthony Cosenza here with the Orange and Black Insider and CincyJungle.com. Happy to be with all of you. Fresh off of my weekend in Cincinnati, watching the Bengals get a big win in person. I loved it. Loved meeting so many of you. And so many of you out there were kind to us. And it was a lot of fun being out there, watching the Bengals, catching the sights, checking out the city. We also checked out the University of Cincinnati football game. So pretty dang good weekend as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure the same can be said for all of you Bengals fans. I apologize for those of you who I think, yeah, Brian Evans, you and I met out there. What's going on, Brian? I apologize for those of you who are tuning in live, and I was a couple minutes late. There was a chirping smoke detector right outside the door in which of the room in which I record, so I had to I don't want you guys hearing a chirping smoke detector throughout the entire show. So anyway, I had to take care of that right before I took the air, took a couple extra minutes, but good to see everybody. We're going to have a little bit of an abbreviated version of the water cooler chat today. Unfortunately, just playing catch up after being on a plane all day yesterday and getting, you know, doing family stuff, all that kind of stuff. So we've got a lot to get to in a very short period of time. I'm going to try and get to a lot of different things covering the Cincinnati Bengals, the AFC North, and the rest of the NFL. So we're going to get to it. Before we do, I want to remind everybody that this show and all of the shows at on the Orange and Black Insider are brought to you by Symbull, S-I-M-B-U-L-L. It is the platform in which you can buy shares of teams like their stocks, and you can trade them around. You can invest in certain teams as long plays and make some money on teams, whether it's ones you're passionate about, ones you think are just savvy investments. And it's not just relegated to NFL football. You can do college football. You can do baseball, all of that. So if you want to make some money on the Cincinnati Bengals, especially after a 1-0 start, you got to get in soon here, because since the partnership with Symbull, we have gone, I think the Bengals were at over $20 a share at the beginning of the partnership, and now they're around $60 as of, and that was before the win. So who knows now, if you got in on the ground level, you made some good money there. But go check out symbull.app/OBI, and you can use the promo code OBI to get incentives in Symbull Gold. So check that out, SIMBULL.APP/OBI. And we are happy to be partnering with them for the 2021 regular season. We did so in the offseason and whatnot. So go check that out, if you will. And of course, this show is always brought to you on your favorite audio streamers, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. Or you could subscribe to the channel. I guess it would be this side on YouTube. Subscribe to that. Turn the bells on for notifications so you know when we've got new stuff coming at you, when we go live, all that kind of stuff. Okay, good to see everybody, and I appreciate you tuning in live. Hey, let's get to a little bit of some things with the Cincinnati Bengals and their performance on Sunday against the Minnesota Vikings. Won a thriller, 27-24, last minute in overtime. Evan McPherson, the hero at the very end, as was CJ Uzama and all of that. So here, let's start with a couple of Twitter bits of information in terms of the offensive line and some PFF scores. Here's Andrew Russell at PFF, a great resource on Twitter if you want to follow him, at PFF_AndrewR. Here's how the OL looks after a full week of play with the overall PFF grade and position rank. And you see Jonah Williams, 73.1, which is good for 15th of 59 qualifying tackles. Quentin Spain, 4th out of 62 qualifying guards with a 79.7 overall score. And then you see some issues at center and right guard. Trey Hopkins, 36.3, ranked 30th out of 31 centers Right guard, Xavier Suofilo, 59.6, which is 38th out of 62 guards. So a couple of issues in the middle there. Riley Reiff, 62.2 overall. But Reiff did have a 78 pass blocking score by PFF standards. And Jonah Williams was in the mid-80s for his pass blocking score. Bengals offensive tackles did not allow a pressure, per PFF crediting at least, did not allow a pressure, a sack, or a quarterback hit on Joe Burrow, which is saying something, seeing as how there were five sacks on Burrow. It was interesting to see that Mike Zimmer, a guy who doesn't usually like to blitz a lot in terms of extra blitzers beyond his defensive line, he brought in Nick Vigil, who got a sack. Harrison Smith got a sack on a blitz as well. So they were able to do some different things and bring pressure up the middle with blitzes. And of course, Pierce in the middle there was a force. He had two sacks on the day too. So at any rate, those are some early scores there. You had Akeem Davis Gaither had a pretty good pass blocking pass defense score on defense there as well by PFF. I think he was in the 79.9. And then the pass blocking also, where you can also credit some of those sacks, Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon, who was the team's highest rated PFF player. He had a 33 pass blocking score and Samaje Perine had a 30.3. So not great in the pass blocking aspects by the running backs there, but Joe Mixon did a lot of other work, had 150 combined yards from scrimmage and a touchdown. So, and Perine had one nice run in there too. So, you know, I mean, I know they weren't doing the work in the pass blocking game. Things got improved there by the backs, but those are the pass blocking grades there. Also, the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's get to the snap counts here. And the newcomers had a lot of snaps, and this is on cincyjungle.com. Sharing this with you here. Okay. By Patrick Judas. This is the week one snaps, and you see the headline, Bengals newcomers dominate the snaps in week one versus the Vikings. So here are some of the tidbits here, and I'm not going to go through every single one of these. I will go through some. Here's the link in the live chat for you all, but the Bengals were out-snapped by the Vikings 83-69. So that's kind of interesting there. The defense was on the field quite a bit. I think there was also, you know, some scenarios in which Minnesota had some extended drives and things of that nature to kind of cause that. And of course, five full quarters of play will cause that. Jamar Chase had 62 snaps at receiver, and Higgins and Boyd only had 51. Now, Higgins left the game with some cramps, so that would explain that. Jamar Chase had the most snaps on the field of the wide receiver group. It was interesting to kind of see a little bit of a quiet day from Tyler Boyd. I expected a little bit more from him. He did have a couple of nice catches, but expected more from him. Darius Hodge only had one snap, so that was kind of telling a little bit as to where they think he is at. From a rotational basis, plus the Bengals were able to get a lot of great pressure from the interior. Larry Ogunjobi and BJ Hill were outstanding on Sunday, combining for three total sacks on the inside. So, you know, they didn't really have a lot of use for Hodge. They had a lot of snaps with Trey Hendrickson, and, you know, they moved around guys a lot. And then, of course, you see here's my next point, 68 snaps by Trey Hendrickson and 72 from Sam Hubbard. So those two dominated the snap counts, and you can see why there was only one snap on defense for Darius Hodge. Cam Sample was on the field on a rotational basis, 29 snaps. So, and then they really, Ogunjobi, 59 snaps. BJ Hill, only 24 snaps and had two sacks and an additional tackle for loss, I believe. So great, great job by Larry Ogunjobi, BJ Hill, and DJ Reader was one of the higher rated PFF players by the Bengals as well. So Auden Tate, not on the field very much, just 8 snaps. Logan Wilson had 72 snaps, but it was Jermaine Pratt. He had, I believe, 8 or 9 tackles. He had the forced fumble and recovery at the end of the game there, a tackle for loss. He had a pretty good game statistically, had the big play at the end there. So kind of an interesting day overall from the linebacker group. I mentioned the high pass defense grade by Davis Gaither. He only had 16 snaps on defense. Ricardo Allen also had a pretty good PFF score as well. I had kind of assumed that the Bengals were going to run a lot of three safety sets and use Ricardo Allen out there quite a bit, which they did. Von Bell was out there. Jesse Bates was out there. Ricardo Allen was out there. And they were doing all kinds of different things on defense there. So that kind of is a snapshot of the snap count. And hopefully you can follow that link that I put in the live chat there to see all of how everything played out right there. Some good news and bad news here in terms of the injury front on what's going on with the Cincinnati Bengals. This scary moment in the game after Joe Burrow took a sack, came up limping a bit on one of his legs, and he is apparently fine. And he was you know, limping off the field after a drive, but he is apparently fine. He had his knee worked on a bit early this week, but he is good to go by all reports. And this is on CincyJungle.com as well. But Trey Waynes is out another week, and that is not good news, because Eli Apple was one of the defensive players, as we kind of expected, who had struggled a bit on Sunday. Unfortunately, we knew he was going to have some issues there in relief of Trey Waynes. We knew, hey, look, even with Trey Waynes in, we knew that the trio of offensive weapons from the Minnesota Vikings were going to be hard to corral. We knew that. And so that kind of proved to be the case. Eli Apple had a couple of issues on defense, but overall, I thought the secondary played pretty well. But regardless, Trey Waynes is going to be out against Chicago. We kind of figured that may be the case. It may be about two or three games. At least we hope that that is the worst case scenario. But Zach Taylor confirmed that this week, that Joe Burrow is okay from that injury that he came up limping a bit on Sunday. And then, of course, Trey Waynes out. So not good news on the injury front on the defensive side of the ball, but some good news for Joe Burrow and company. Keeping it rolling here, this Jesse Bates contract situation was not resolved before the regular season started, which is usually when the Bengals like to take care of these kinds of things, and they did not. They simply did not get it done. Jesse Bates wants to be paid like a top safety, as he should. The Bengals do want to keep him, I believe, but I'm of the opinion that they just don't like to pay that type of money, especially guaranteed money, to the safety position. So this is from my colleague John Sheeran. Jesse Bates to play, quote, pissed off after not receiving a contract extension. This was in a little bit of a sit down with the Cincinnati media in on Monday afternoon. Quote, wish it would have gotten done. Quote, they got Sam Hubbard's deal done. I wish I was the next man up. I'll play my part this year and see what happens. I need to continue to show with my play. I'll be a little pissed off for sure. So he was very active as well. It was in on a number of plays on Sunday. Playing pissed off is, I guess, for lack of better words, that's what Jesse Bates is saying, and that's how he's performing. So he is a player that is key on that defense. There are a lot of, and I thought just in general, we'll talk more about this tomorrow with John Sheeran and myself on the Deeper Dive show, but I thought that each respective unit of the defense seemed to be gelling and playing a lot better with each other, at least yesterday, particularly for it being week one, particularly for all of the weapons that Minnesota has on offense. I feel like the defensive line was getting the push, was getting the sacks. I think, you know, they had a small handful on Sunday. And then, of course, you had the linebackers making some plays. I mentioned Davis Gaither doing some nice things in pass coverage. Jermaine Pratt getting the forced fumble and fumble recovery. Logan Wilson out there for a number of snaps, and he was calling the plays, as we saw during summer. So, and then, you know, you had the secondary. I know Eli Apple had some issues out there, but, I mean, the secondary was making plays. Awuzie had two passes defended, and they were making life a little difficult for Kirk Cousins on Sunday. So, you know, there were, yeah, and Big Jim Slade here says Ricardo Allen looked good. Yeah, I mentioned he had a pretty good PFF score as well. I think all three units kind of played well with each other and were able to kind of feed off of each other, if you will. So it was nice to see that. And of course, the depth, even with Joseph Osai being injured, even with Wyatt Hubert being injured, the depth on the defensive line seems to be in a much better place this year as opposed to last year. You're able to work in DJ Reader, who had a great game. You're able to get Larry Ogunjobi and BJ Hill in there. And then, of course, get a lot of snaps out of Hubbard and Hendrickson, who were doing some good things off the edge as well. So good work by the defensive line. It starts there and works back. And we knew the secondary was going to be one of the stronger points of the team, and that proved to be so. Let's see. Where do we want to go next here? Let's talk about fourth down calls. Now, there were, I believe, three attempts in the game, fourth down attempts. The Bengals were successful on two of them. One was not successful. The one that was not successful was a questionable call. I think a lot of people like the aggressiveness from Zach Taylor on that one, the one where he went for it on his own 30-yard line. And the Bengals did not get it. Others, I really, it was nerve-wracking, but I really, really like the idea of the Bengals going for it on fourth down in overtime, kind of saying we're not playing for the tie. They were around midfield in their own territory, but they decided to go for it, and they weren't going to play for the tie, and there was over a minute left. So if they did not get this play, the one that went to Uzama for 32 yards, that they were going to give the ball to the Vikings with good field position, and in all likelihood, they were going to make a couple plays and potentially kick the game-winning field goal themselves. So Zach Taylor did not go for the tie. He wasn't playing conservatively and did not do so all game. It paid off for them twice, backfired big time once in the third quarter when the Bengals had a 21-7 lead. There's an article on Cincy Jungle particularly talking about the one in overtime. I'll pin that in the live chat for you there. But basically, it's, you know, CJ Uzama was the hero right there. And here's the quote via Ben Baby afterward. Bengals tight end CJ Uzama said Joe Burrow wanted to run the fourth down play in practice earlier this week. They redid the rep because of something in Uzama's route. In 3 years, I've never gotten that ball. It's a good thing that we did it again. And we can give you just this one real quick to build off of that article on Cincy Jungle. If you want to credit Zach Taylor for that, you can, but apparently Joe Burrow was the one who reportedly changed from a run to that pass to CJ Uzama on fourth down to set up that winning kick and really kind of threw him open, to use a football cliche. Just kind of let him and put some air under it. And it was a great play. It was one that I play action on fourth and inches in your own territory. It's a gutsy call, whether it was Zach and Joe, whether this is accurate that Joe Burrow changed to this play here. I don't know. It was a really, really neat. You can see here it is right here. Speaking to him by phone after the game, I told him, I said at that moment, he's changing it to a pass. Sounds like you were right, Burrow said, laughing. So, yeah, seems like it was Joe's decision to make to go for it that way and get that big play. So you got to – and look, that particularly, if that is the case, that is particularly a gutsy call because I mentioned that Joe – had that injury earlier in the game. And after that injury, if you notice, the Bengals were going a little run heavy. They were trying to protect him. Joe had the 5 sacks. He had been hit a couple times. He got up limping after that one time. And after that, I think Zach Taylor said, we're going to hand the ball off more. We're going to lean on Joe Mixon a bit more. And so this fourth and inches, in all likelihood, you would have thought they were going to give the ball to Joe Mixon once again. And gutsy call. And it paid off for the Bengals big time. A stellar, stellar win and a stellar play to CJ Uzama from Joe Burrow. Let's transition as the Bengals now move into week two. It's going to be interesting because last week, Chicago lost to the Rams on Sunday Night Football, and Andy Dalton did not have a great game. There seems to be a little bit, even though Matt Nagy is a guy who has really come to the defense of Andy Dalton and proclaimed him all offseason. He's the starter. He's the starter. He's the starter. they had Justin Fields come in for a handful of plays. Andy Dalton struggled a little bit. Now, there's been no announcement that Andy Dalton is not going to start week two against the Bengals at home, at his home in Chicago. So we're all expecting Andy Dalton to suit up and start against the Bengals. But I think we're also expecting now, based on what we saw Sunday night, that Justin Fields will be featured in this game. How heavily, we're not sure. But there seems to be the situation where the Bengals will see two quarterbacks, their defense will see two different quarterbacks on Sunday. But even with the win and Chicago's loss, the Bengals are a 3-point underdog to the Bears in Chicago. So this win did not make believers of a lot of folks. I didn't get this article up, but additionally, in Pete Prisco of CBS Sports, his power rankings, if I remember correctly from this morning, it looked like he had the Bengals only at 25, in which they were moved up maybe a spot from his previous edition of that before the games were played. So Bengals 1-0, they head to Chicago as a 3-point underdog as of right now. Obviously that can fluctuate a half point either way, depending on which, if you are a better, which outlet you use. But right now Bears are favored by 3. So I don't really know how I feel about that. It's a little surprising, I guess, but I guess usually when you get 2 or 3 points, that's usually if the two teams are seen as pretty even, that 3-point kind of spread usually goes to the home team. So that's just kind of how Vegas and their lines play it. But we will see if the Bengals are able to not only cover, but outright beat the Bears in week two. And of course, we'll be covering that on the podcast channel and on CincyJungle.com. So keep it there. One last tidbit of news as it concerns the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals waive Donnie Lewis with an injury settlement. So he was placed on IR before the regular season, but he is no longer with the team after getting an injury settlement. He was a first-year player of Tulane and was placed on injured reserve before final cuts. So he was a seventh-round pick out of the Browns a couple of years ago. He was on their practice squad as a rookie. And then they waived him last year. He signed with the Bengals in the middle of last year and was on their practice squad, then signed a futures deal with the Bengals. But he is Donnie Lewis no longer with the Bengals. He signed an injury settlement with the club. So in case you missed the games in the AFC North, you didn't get to check a lot of different things going on, and or maybe you missed what happened last night, a wild one in Las Vegas as the Ravens took on the Las Vegas Raiders. Here we go. The two teams that a lot of people thought would be the two worst teams in the division, the Steelers and the Bengals, are sitting up top at 1-0 with wins that a lot of people did not think they would get. The Steelers beat the Bills, surprisingly, in Buffalo, 23-16. There were some turnovers by Buffalo, a couple of ridiculous catches by Pittsburgh wide receivers on these contested bobbling catches that ended up being big plays. So that really kind of was the difference there. You see the seven point game. The Bengals, of course, as we know, won in overtime. The Browns had a lead on the Kansas City Chiefs, let it slip away and lose 33-29. Tough one for them there. Baltimore Ravens 33-27, a wild, wild game last night in Las Vegas. Went to overtime. It looked like the Raiders had won it. It was called back at the 1 yard line. A touchdown was called back at the 1 yard line. Derek Carr throws an interception a couple of plays later. The Ravens get the ball back, and then there was it looked like they were driving to score at some point. It was a little back and forth, and then Lamar Jackson inexplicably fumbles the ball on a quarterback hit by the Raiders. And then Derek Carr floats a ball up to his wide receiver and Zay Jones, actually a guy they got in a trade with Buffalo, and that did it. So, hey, Bengals are up top, tied at the division with in the AFC North with the Steelers, Ravens, and Browns, respectively, at 0-1. And then, of course, the Bengals play the Steelers in Pittsburgh week 3. So that will be, especially what happens this week, that will be a very, very intriguing game to watch there. Yeah, Neil Townsend said that game was epic. Let's talk a little bit more. You could see at the end of the game last night that Lamar Jackson was pretty dejected in terms of, you know, that fumble and all kinds of different things. I saw him, what I thought, say on the bench, hey, after they lost, basically the camera panned to him and he said, you know, this one's on me type of thing. Felt bad for the guy. I really did. But basically he said, you know, this is the fumble at the end there. That ticked me off, Jackson said of his fumbles, which was from the Baltimore Sun. I hate any type of turnovers. It happens in football. He had 235 passing yards, a touchdown, and 86 rushing yards. A lot of people are saying he didn't look great. There were a couple of missed throws, to be sure, but he still is electric when running the football and ad-libbing. So there was a couple of big plays there. That's always going to be a threat with Lamar Jackson. And, of course, when the Bengals play him twice this year, they have to be better at corralling him than they did, than they were in so many other games. But such a great talent is Lamar Jackson. Had a little bit of off throws and whatnot yesterday. Max Crosby for Las Vegas is he's turned into a really good player. Really good player. So at any rate, that's kind of a little bit of a snapshot with the AFC North. Got a couple of other NFL headlines to get to you. Then we're going to hop on out of here. Unfortunately, a lot of injury and or uncertainty with a lot of different things here in the NFL. The Broncos, Jerry Jeudy is placed on IR. So is Ronald Darby, their cornerback. Bad news there. Darby injured his hamstring against the Giants. And Jeudy had an ankle injury. Jeudy's injury is not season ending. But Darby is expected after that 3-week absence required by short-term IR, which of course is a new rule in the NFL. So they can kind of, you can kind of do some different things. IR doesn't automatically mean you're gone for a really long time or the entire year or whatever. So they will, in corresponding moves, they will elevate Nate Hairston from the practice squad as well as Kendall Hinton to replace Jeudy. But Jerry Jeudy had a pretty good game against the Broncos, an ankle injury, and of course one of those great receivers in the 2020 draft class. So he is going to be out for a little while. Not sure if that's going to be that 3-week thing or if that's going to be a IR return after a handful of weeks there, but he will not be out there for the Broncos. Kind of a big blow to them there. Man, this thing in Houston with Deshaun Watson is not fun, at least not for them. So Houston actually won a big divisional game against the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday, but that was with Tyrod Taylor at the helm because of all of these off-field things with Deshaun Watson. So the expectation throughout the facility, this is on NFL.com, the expectation throughout the facility at NRG Stadium is that Deshaun Watson will never take another snap for the Texans. He's demanding a trade and is facing 22 civil lawsuits right now. Still ongoing investigations and whatnot. That seems to just be very, very slow moving on that front. GM Nick Caserio says, quote, "I've had multiple conversations with Deshaun in training camp. Like I said, his attitude has been good. He hasn't been a problem. He hasn't been a disruption. So we're going to take it one day at a time." He's currently listed as the third string quarterback on the team's depth chart. He's been interacting with teammates, but obviously they are giving the practice reps to Tyrod Taylor, the bulk of them, to be ready right now. So just a weird and very, very odd situation with Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans there, and one to keep monitoring. And then, of course, unfortunate injury news for the San Francisco 49ers, who had a bunch of injury issues last year, a bunch of injury issues. Raheem Mostert to undergo season-ending knee surgery. Also, his Raheem Mostert's wife, I think, took to social media and said that all kinds of fans and others were, you know, making some really, really awful comments to him and his family on social media. And it's just terrible that things have gone that way. But initially, it was supposed to be something with, it was going to be a 6 to 8 week absence type of thing, maybe, you know, a short-term IR type of thing. But again, he's opting for season-ending surgery following the injury in Sunday's 41-33 win in Detroit. So for fantasy footballers, kind of a little bit of a bloodbath in terms of injuries to some important players and some high picks potentially in your leagues. So something to monitor there. And of course, much more importantly, we hope that all those players heal up quick, come back and end up playing well for their respective teams. That's going to do it for me. We still had a 30-minute episode here. I went longer than I actually had intended to because I've got a ton of other things going on, but I always want to get to you. I didn't get to a post-game show because I was at the game. It would have been very, very difficult to do that. But I hope you enjoyed the great one by Ace and Zim on our podcast channel, so check that out. And then, of course, I didn't get to do the water cooler chat on Monday. I might kind of probably still will do them on Tuesdays just so we get the Monday Night Football context within the show. So check that out. I think we'll be doing them Tuesday more likely than not. But at any rate, thanks everybody for tuning in. We've got the deep dive show coming tomorrow night with John Sheeran and myself. We've got listener questions live on Friday. We're going to do a little bit of fantasy football information for you as well. And that'll be on the channel, as well as all the great stuff from Ace and Zim on the Orange is the New Black podcast and Chalk Talk from Matt Minnick, all on the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. Get the channel how you can on your favorite audio streamer. Subscribe and leave a rating if you could. And of course, you could subscribe to our YouTube channel right around here. Click that little icon to subscribe and click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new stuff is available, and all of that. It's great to be talking football with all of you again. Great to be talking about a Bengals win. Great to have been in person at that game and meet so many of you and all of your great complimentary words that you gave me about the show and what we do on CincyJungle.com. It means a lot, and hopefully we will see you soon out there in Cincinnati. If not, thanks, everybody, for tuning in live. Thanks for listening afterward. We're going to be bringing you all kinds of different stuff to cover the Bengals in this exciting 21 season. Take it easy.